Murfreesboro.
This is FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. Rutherford County's place to talk. Stand by, Rutherford County. The WGNS Action Line continues a search for truth.
Good morning to you. Welcome into the Action Line from WGNS. This morning we are focusing on Middle Tennessee State University. So much happening over there. And Christmas is in the air, the holiday season. And not only is it in the air, it feels like it when you step outside. We're going to be focusing this morning on the joys of the season, which is coming up December the 1st at MTSU. And Meredith Kerr is with us this morning. Meredith, good morning.
Good morning.
Great to have you with us today. This is a big tradition now. It started last year, did it?
It did. This is it started last year as a way to introduce the community to our performing and fine arts departments at MTSU, as well as kind of give them a holiday production that everyone can enjoy.
Fantastic. And you have with you Skylar Greco and Justin Reed. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning. How's it going?
Doing great. Good to have you with us. Tell us what you're doing in this production.
Well, I'm the production manager, so I kind of put everything together and pull all of the different pieces from all of our different arts areas into the show. And then Skylar is a director of a piece.
Ah, very good.
Yes.
Tell us what we're going to be seeing.
Well, there will be a whole lot of different performances from all the arts departments on campus. I'm a theater student, and so I'm working with other theater students on presenting a storytelling of How the Grinch Stole Christmas, actually. It's very fun and kid-friendly and exciting, lots of fast movement and things like that. But then we'll get really great performances from the music department with wonderful concerts or vocal selections and instrumental selections, great dance pieces from the dance department, and even some artwork for sale and live painting involving from the art students as well.
So this will really get you into the Christmas spirit. I mean, you'll feel like it's time to run out and do all the shopping.
Oh, that's the goal. We want you to really get excited and go out and just celebrate for the rest of the month.
Now, it sounds like this is a great production for all ages.
Oh, absolutely. I would definitely say that last year we had plenty of children there, that they loved what was going on. You know, it was all bright lights and exciting, but then at the same time, you've got a little bit more of a classical feel for perhaps some of your older audience members that prefer a orchestra or things of that nature. So it's really wide range.
Meredith, tell us a little about how we can get tickets and what is the ticket price?
Well, how you can get tickets is to go to mtsuarts.com, or I'm going to throw this to Justin, or there's a ticket number that you could call. It's 1-877-TICKETS, I believe. Is
yes.
That correct? That is correct. So you can go and get tickets either of those ways, as well as go to the box office the day of the show, an hour and a half before the show, to get tickets. Ticket prices are $10 for the general public and $5 for those who are ages 55 and up, or if you are in the grade school K through 12. And MTSU students get in free with their student ID.
Now, this is an opportunity, I would guess, too, for high school students who haven't made up their mind as to where they wish to attend college. If you're interested in theater and the arts, this is a great opportunity to come check out what happens.
Absolutely. This would be an excellent opportunity for a student who is considering MTSU to come by and kind of see what we're about and the level of production that we put on. I feel like this particular show this year is even better than the show that we did last year. We've added a lot more elements this year to the production, and I think that everyone will really enjoy it.
What? Let me ask both of you, what sort of made you decide to go to MTSU? Skylar, let's start with you.
Oh, well, I grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee, and was a very active theater student there at my high school. And I knew that I wanted to pursue theater with my life. But I also come from a large family, so we were looking for in-state schools. And it kind of came down between University of Tennessee Knoxville and MTSU. And as I researched, I really just kind of fell in love with MTSU's theater program and how they take care of their art students, because it's a well-supported program. It's a generalist theater degree, so we're forced to be involved in all areas of theater, including acting, design, and all the elements, which to me is the best theater education you can get, because as a theater professional, you may end up working in any particular area that is not exactly where you set out to be. But with this kind of education, you're able to work in all areas of theater, which just make you more applicable as you continue into the professional world.
Justin, what about you? What persuaded you to go to MTSU?
Well, I went to MTSU many, many moons ago. And actually, the theater education program is what drew me to the university. And I absolutely fell in love with it and been here for about 10 years now. So it's been really great.
So after you graduated, you decided to stay.
I decided to stay, and the theater program had an opening in their Tucker Theater in the management side of that facility, and I was lucky enough to be hired on there.
Let me ask you both, or really all three of you, this, because you probably have thoughts on this. Are there some pretty good opportunities once you finish your degree at MTSU? Are there some good opportunities for being hired?
Yes, I think so. I feel like the administration there really recognizes that some of the students that come out of there are some of the best and brightest in the state, and MTSU as a whole wants to hire the best and brightest faculty, mm-hmm. staff, and administration in the state. So I think that there's a lot of opportunities there.
Great. So this is one of those opportunities to come and see what this department does, MTSU Arts. And while we're talking about MTSU Arts, this is a group that people here in the community who enjoy the arts, you can sort of help to underwrite by being a member of MTSU Arts.
Absolutely. All of the proceeds, or majority of the proceeds from Joys of the Season, will go back to support the performing and fine arts departments. As well as, you could also become a member of our MTSU Arts Patron Society, which begins at a level of $100 and above. You can join the Patron Society and get tickets to exclusive events and shows, and it's a way to give back to your community, but also give back to the students and faculty in the College of Liberal Arts.
Very good.
And coming to see Joys of the Season, I think, is an excellent opportunity for someone who's considering being an arts patron, because they're going to see the cream of the crop of the talent and the student population that are involved in the arts on campus. And they'll be able to see what their funds, what their giving is going to go towards, and the students that it's going to help.
Once again, before we wrap up this segment of the show, tell us when the performance will be and what time, where, and what people need to do to get tickets. Can you just walk in other words?
So the show is December the 1st. That's next Thursday. The show is at 7 p.m. at Tucker Theater. Tickets are available online at mtsuarts.com or by calling 1-877-TICKETS. And tickets are $5 and $10, and tickets will be sold at the door.
Okay, very good. So circle that date on your calendar, and we will see you December 1st at Tucker Theater, 7 o'clock in the evening, right here. A good way to sort of begin the holiday season at MTSU. We thank you very much for joining us this morning and telling us about what's happening in MTSU Arts. We will continue our focus on Middle Tennessee State University. A lot continues to go on there. Stay with us.
create your own discount. Bring in your old sporting goods and walk out with new equipment. Trade in, trade up, play it again sports on North Thompson Lake.
Good morning, Interstate 24. If you're wondering what that looks like up through the Hickory Hollow area, it's busy, but it's moving. Still, traffic seems a little bit lighter than normal this morning, but more radar out here all week long, so get used to that no matter which direction you're going out for the Thanksgiving holiday. They're out here, that's for sure, 840, especially over there around that road construction. Stop by, see the new spas at Four Winds Spas Factory Direct there at I-24 at Antioch. They're off OHB. Go by and see them or call 925-9176. I'm Commander Chuck. You're on time traffic.
Thank you, Chuck. What about that Murfreesboro weather? Brought to you by First National Bank of Murfreesboro.
We'll see mostly sunny skies here this afternoon with a high in the low 50s. Northeast winds at 5 to 10. Tonight, mostly clear, low near 26. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on News Radio WGNS. Right now, 34.
This weather brought to you by First National Bank of Murfreesboro.
This is Frieda Morgan with First National Bank of Murfreesboro. If you want banking in a snap, be sure and download the First National Bank app. First National Bank of Murfreesboro offers mobile banking, text banking. We also have check card fraud alerts, and we have several off-site ATM locations for you here in Murfreesboro. First National Bank of Murfreesboro, 2230 Mercury Boulevard. Member FDIC.
We're talking with one of the younger customers at Bell Jewelers here in Murfreesboro. So I understand you're shopping for Mom.
I'm picking Mom a new bracelet.
I bet Mom would like a new bracelet. That sounds perfect.
I'm going to get her something special.
I bet you love your mom.
I love Mommy.
Bell Jewelers, the perfect place to shop for Mom, your girlfriend, your husband, your boyfriend. Doesn't matter who. Everybody loves Bell Jewelers. Bell Jewelers in Murfreesboro on Broad Street across from Toots, a local tradition for over 135 years.
The Action Line with Bart Walker, weekday mornings at 8:10.
WGNS, your good neighbor station.
Rutherford County's place to talk.
Welcome back. We are focusing on Middle Tennessee State University. And in this segment, Drs. Ken Blake and Jason Reinecke with us. They're director and associate director of the MTSU polls. And we're going to be talking about the MTSU polls, polling in the wake of the presidential election. Well, good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
It's great to be here.
Things have changed, obviously.
Some, and in some ways not. We can talk about that.
What do you think went wrong? I mean, as far as polls go, the polls were shouting victory in one area, and it went the other way. Has the population changed?
What happened? Yeah. Well, first of all, in the way of self interest, I have to say the MTSU poll got this right. Remember that.
That's right.
We told you ahead of the Republican primary that Donald Trump was leading in his field.
Now, was this Tennessee you were talking about?
This was
about?
Tennessee only,
in
of
Tennessee.
Course.
Okay.
And then we also our findings also indicated in October, I think it was September and October, that Donald Trump would was leading in Tennessee, and that certainly turned out to be the case as well. So
the other polls,
polls. Although those other polls use the same methodology we do. We do random digit dialing. We call a mix of cell phones as well as landlines. I think the difference is those other polls had a much more difficult job to pull off. In Tennessee, it's attitudes here were fairly stable. We didn't see a lot of campaigning here. We didn't see a lot of advertising here in the course of the election. It was kind of a given that Tennessee would go into the Republican column. So we didn't have a very volatile situation here, and that was probably not the case in some of those other polls where things were a little closer than perhaps we as media consumers noticed or were willing to say. So there's a bit of confirmation bias as well in how we read reports. What's your take on that, Jason?
Yeah, the big takeaway with the MTSU poll is that we did get the state right both in the primary and the general election. However, between the end of September and the second Tuesday after the second Monday in November, there was about an 11-point difference in what we saw and what we ended up seeing in terms of Donald Trump's portion of the vote. And there are some explanations for that that other people and we have kind of thought about in comparison to some of the national polling as well. We were much closer, the difference was much closer between our polling at the end of September and the final election result in November with Hillary Clinton, just a few points difference there within what we'd call the margin of error. So we did see some of the same phenomenon, though not nearly as pronounced or with as big an impact on the actual outcome and the interpretation of polls with regard to the outcome as some others saw.
Now, is MTSU offering a degree in how to do polls?
No. We have a graduate program in mass communication, and students in that program do learn quantitative methodology that includes some basics in public opinion polling and the stats, but polling itself is a much wider art and science, especially when it gets into the difficult question of predicting things like who is going to actually turn out to vote and that sort of thing. We don't have a degree in that, but we'll do our best to teach you if you want to learn.
Now, that almost takes a crystal ball or something, I think, to know who's going to turn out to vote.
It's a mix of art and science, yes.
So as you look ahead, how many polls do you do a year at MTSU?
We do one a semester, so that would be two a year. It's pretty much all we have funding for. It would be lovely to do more, but that's about it. So we will probably poll again in January to February, and we will be focused at that time on the legislative agenda.
So obviously you do other things. The two of you do other things at MTSU than polls. What department are you in?
We're both in the School of Journalism. Mm-hmm. I teach writing and reporting on the undergraduate level, as well as data journalism, which is an application of quantitative methods to the kinds of research and story research that reporters do. Jason, how about you?
I teach classes in freedom of expression and the First Amendment to media students, and then also at the graduate level, I teach classes on quantitative research methods and media and public opinion.
Okay. And I should have added that I teach the graduate theory course on media theory as well, and empirical media theory.
Are there a lot of people wanting to get into this rapidly changing career? I mean, because this is a technology-driven business.
Mm-hmm. Wanting is such a strong word. journalism students typically are rather math phobic, so we do kind of drag them kicking and screaming sometimes to numbers and data analysis. But once they get there, many decide it's a nice place to be. Yes.
So, and there are plenty of opportunities.
There are many opportunities. Yes.
Now, as you look at this particular poll that you have, we've all seen across the nation, is that going to bring any changes in the way that you conduct polls? Are you going to add an extra tweak to it, or what's going to be in the future?
I think that we will be tweaking. What do you think, Jason?
Yeah, I think the main takeaway from this election is that we, as a field, need to be very careful about our methodology moving forward and making sure that we get samples of people and contact people who are truly representative of the population and representative of voters. There are a number of explanations for why national polls may have been off somewhat in terms of the difference between the findings of the poll and the election. Some people may have turned in the direction of Trump at the last moment, gone from undecided to Trump voters at the last moment. It could be that there was this shy Trump phenomenon that some have talked about in terms of people being reluctant for one reason or another to say that they intended to vote for Donald Trump when polled. It may be that Trump voters for one reason or another, were less likely to pick up the phone when they were called by pollsters. And so those are the questions that research on more of the academic side, the kind of published journal articles and things like that, that we do as social scientists, as opposed to the more public polling part of what we do, are going to need to focus on, certainly in very short order, to try to shore up some of the things that seem to collapse a little bit this time around.
I think we're going to have to look pretty closely as well at the differences between conducting state-level polls and national polls. In national polls, All polls contain error, errors in selection and representation. They tend to wash out and end up kind of even at the national level. But when you're dealing with a state population, you have unique minorities. You have people that are difficult to reach more so than others. And that's where things kind of went off the rails on in this election is in those in some of those state-level polls. They tend to be off. They tend to be off in the same direction. That's good news, though. It's systematic, which means we can figure it out.
Are you finding that the American public is changing? For example, you do a lot of these by telephone.
Correct.
And people have caller ID, and they look at it, and it's some strange listing. Or they pick it up, and they hear a recording start. Are they hanging up?
Response rates are going down and have been for quite some time. The interesting thing is that accuracy has not been falling as rapidly as, in fact, it hasn't really been falling at all as response rates have declined. That said, we are exploring different methodologies. The obvious approach is to include more cell phones in our sampling, and we do that now in increasing proportions. We're also doing a lot of work in sort of mixed mode surveys and also in something called address-based sampling, where we take a number of approaches to trying to reach you other than just your cell phone. We get your address, we try to contact you by mail, that sort of thing.
Now, since you do two polls per year at MTSU, what determines the topics?
We do. Okay.
I'm impressed.
Yeah. We're independent. We try to be independent and nonpartisan. And what we try to do is poll on whatever on the public agenda is. You might imagine we get a lot of phone calls from a lot of people asking us to ask their question. But we try to pay attention to the media, to what people are interested in, to what's being talked about. We pay a lot of attention to the legislative agenda every spring to see what proposed laws are coming up and try to ask about those things. And we do that as a public service so that both voters and legislators can understand where the public stands on some of these things that are being proposed.
Most colleges offer polls?
I don't know about most. Do you have any sense?
You know,
those good ones do.
Yeah. Across the nation, you know, you can basically count on one university per state doing some kind of polling fairly regularly. In smaller population states, that's less common, but most states have one university or another that does that. Yeah, but it's certainly not every university.
In Tennessee, it's pretty much us and Vanderbilt University. Mm-hmm. I don't think UT does any
very infrequently
polling on a regular basis.
Yeah. Well, who's ahead?
we
keep scores.
Of course, we're better, but no, Vanderbilt. We see them as an important partner in polling. It's nice to have two polls in the state. We can check each other. Fortunately, on this campaign, we were both pretty much in agreement. Both polls were in agreement on how Trump was doing. So
very close.
So that's reassuring.
Do you both ask similar questions? I mean, because it's hard to, I would imagine it'd be hard to compare two different polls with different questions.
I think our topic agendas tend to be pretty similar because we both have essentially the same mission, which is to poll on the public agenda, and that tends to be pretty consistent. We don't collaborate on question wording and that sort of thing, but we are both writing questions in accordance with fairly well established guidelines and theory. So we do tend to be fairly comparable, I think. What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's some natural overlap because of focus on the issues that we would both agree are important. At the same time, there are unique areas as well that we pull over because we're independent of each other totally. But so in the fall, we tend to focus on the context of Tennessee as the state relates to the nation, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. And in the spring, we tend to focus on more looking more internally at the legislative agenda within the state and things like that. And that's a fairly natural focus for those two times a year, because in the fall you have your national context elections, and in the spring the legislature is about to go into session and we want to know what people think about the things that they're going to look at. So because of that, there tends to be a little bit of overlap, but there's also a lot of unique data between the two of us as well.
Mm-hmm. How long have we had polls? Has it been since mankind began? Or
well, I guess it depends on how you define polls. Polling based on random selection and that methodology got its start in the 30s and 40s. About the time of the famous Dewey Defeats Truman headline. That was kind of the triumph, actually, of polling based on random selection and random methodology, because polling got that one right.
And the newspapers didn't, obviously.
The prevailing polling methodology at the time was to call people from a pre-constructed list. I believe it was automobile registrations, wasn't it?
Automobile registrations or subscribers, yes, to the publication itself,
and
whatever.
And the problem was, in that particular election, people who owned cars tended to be wealthy, and people who did not own cars tended not to be wealthy and not on the automobile registrations. And so they got underrepresented in the polling that was done, and that's why the election was a surprise.
So have the ways that you poll changed dramatically over the decades?
Oh yeah, and they've had to change to keep up. The most obvious change recently has been the inclusion of cell phones in our sampling to pick up people who have only a cell phone and have no home phone. So we will have to continue to evolve to reach folks who don't want to be reached around their caller IDs and so forth.
Now, with cell phones, do you just generate numbers, or is there a list of cell phone numbers?
It's actually kind of a mix. There's a defined list of the first three digits on a cell number, and then we randomly generate the last list. But we don't personally do that in-house. We buy that list from a company that does it professionally.
Now, I know that the Small Business Administration at MTSU used to work with small businesses and help them get loans and help them do this or that. And one of the things they helped with was seeing if there was a need for whatever their business would be in the community, seeing if there was a following for that. And they did surveys. Mm-hmm. Do you work with the Small Business Administration at MTSU and helping them reach out to their potential clients?
We have not, we're pretty busy. As you mentioned, we have a lot going on, but I personally would think it would be very interesting to see some kind of local panel type survey or something put together to keep a closer pulse on what public opinion is just right here in our local community. I think that would be very interesting.
And there is some really great polling that comes out of the Jones College of Business about consumer confidence in the mid-state and throughout the state as well. That's independent of mm-hmm. us and our operation, but some other great stuff coming out of MTSU.
Yeah, that's Tim Grafe in the I believe he's in the management and marketing department now, which is merged moved around a little bit, but he does that poll. We used to work together in that we used to share a polling lab on campus. Now we outsource our data collection, so we don't do that anymore. But Tim's quite capable. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting poll.
And your next poll will be when?
We're still catching up on sleep from this last one, but I'm pretty sure it'll be late January, early February.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we will be watching closely.
Thank you
for that result. Doctors Ken Blake and Jason Reinecke with us this morning, director and associate director of the MTSU polls. We'll be sitting on our hands and waiting.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having
Thank us. You so
Thanks
much.
For joining us. Hey, have a super day. Stay with us. Much more to come. We're going to continue our focus on Middle Tennessee State University.
On a cruel tide, and every one of us has to face that day. Do you cross the bridge?
High school sports, Blue Raider games. It's only on Rutherford County's Place to Talk. WGNS, AM, FM, online.
Hi, this is Amanda from Animal City. Come get a break from your hectic lifestyle with the soothing effects of an aquarium. And if you have ever dreamed of having a beautiful saltwater tank in your home, we can help make that a reality. Here at Animal City, we have a great selection of fish, aquariums, and all the supplies needed to keep them happy, healthy, and looking beautiful. And with Christmas coming, Animal City is your headquarters for gifts both for pets and pet lovers. Animal City, your pet professionals at 919 Northwest Broad Street in Murfreesboro.
Hi, this is Peter Demas with Demas's Restaurants and Peter D's Restaurants. If you have friends coming over or family coming and you don't have time to cook, you know, Demas's carryout is something that we highly encourage you to do. We remodeled our restaurant in order to accommodate our carryout business at Demas's so that you can get in and get out as quickly as possible and have the exact same quality meals that you have inside the restaurant that you can have at home. And if you have a bigger event that you want catered, whether it's a business luncheon or if you have a social gathering, Peter D's has both drop-off and full-service catering available. In fact, Peter D's is the only restaurant in Murfreesboro that is licensed to do off-site bartending catering as well. So if you're in need for something like that, feel free to call us or contact us through www.thepeterds.com. Demas's Carryout and Peter D's has catering available. This is Peter Demas. We want you to bring your family and friends to Peter D's Restaurant on Medical Center Parkway or Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street, both in Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
We'll see mostly sunny skies here this afternoon with a high in the low 50s. Northeast winds of 5 to 10. Tonight, mostly clear, low near 26. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on News Radio WGNS. Right now, 34.
On air, online, and on the phone. You can listen to us anywhere. News Radio WGNS is Rutherford County's place to talk.
Welcome back. We're continuing to salute Middle Tennessee State University. And our guest on this segment is Dr. Angela Ferris, Assistant Professor in the Department of Social Work and Coordinator of the Master of Social Work Program. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Now, social work is, I guess, a rapidly changing field. And a lot of students are there. How many students are in this department?
Social work is a growing profession in Tennessee. And here at MTSU, we have the largest school of social work in the state of Tennessee. We have just under 350 majors in our undergraduate degree program. And in our graduate school, which is a collaborative between Middle Tennessee State, Tennessee State, and Austin Peay, we have close to 200 students seeking their graduate degree.
Now, when you look at the growth in social work, what do you think is causing that? Obviously, I hope jobs are out there. Maybe that's causing it.
It is. And actually, the Bureau of Workforce Statistics, both nationally and in Tennessee, predict that social work is one of the fastest growing professions and occupations in the United States at a pace of about 19 to 24%, which is a very high job rate, future growth for an occupation. I think there's a lot of reasons social work is growing. One, because the demand of healthcare is changing. The idea of going to a doctor and it's you and a doctor, a patient and a doctor alone solving your problems is fading out. More and more in healthcare, they're looking at whole person approaches. And what that means is that a team of people come together and look at an individual and how they're doing and what they might need. And that would include a social worker who's looking at your social needs, your life needs, your mental health needs as part of your well-being. I also think, though, our profession's growing because young people today want to do something that matters, and they want to do something that they feel like makes a difference. And social work gives a lot of opportunity for people who are interested in improving their communities and improving conditions of people or concerned about children and their future. Social work gives that group of people a venue to serve others.
Now, when you think of social work, and this may be the wrong image, I think of a person who has a job where they have a caseload of several hundred people that they're working with and don't have an opportunity to get to know any of them because they are overloaded with paperwork almost. Has that changed?
Well, it's changed some, but that's not a horribly inaccurate image sometimes. Social workers do tend to work really hard.
Okay.
It's hard to say no to somebody when you see that there's an individual with a need. And so a lot of times there are large caseloads and large work. But more and more, there's a recognition that quality work is important. And so while social workers will manage cases that are complex and have a lot of different layers to it, and there's certainly a tremendous amount of paperwork, For good reason most of the time, but a lot of paperwork involved. Most of them are, though, not this image of the distant worker moving through government resources, that they really are highly skilled professionals who are interested in the individual or the community they're serving with and doing a really excellent job of helping them improve the outcomes of their life.
I'm always amazed that when you look at a college, you have people coming in from high school who sometimes, and probably most of the time, have no real clue as to what they want to do. Mm-hmm. But they do have things that they enjoy. They have attitudes. They have personalities. What type of person would be a good social worker? And I'm asking this because, let's say their parents, grandparents are listening right now and they're scratching their head, what would little Johnny, what would Sally be good doing? They're a junior in high school right now and we need to get them focused in some direction. Mm-hmm. So what type of person would be a good social worker?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's a lot of different people who ultimately are drawn to the profession of social work and make good social workers. A lot of times what you might think about is if you've got a child who or a young person who just loves to serve others, you know, they're always volunteering for outings in their school, say, where they go serve in the homeless community, or they're the type of child who can organize other people to go do something really great. Whether that's helping others or not is not necessarily the point. Social workers tend to be community organizers. They tend to be people who look upon others with a lot of compassion. They tend to be good problem solvers and can think through complex systems like our government and government services and government agencies. So if you've got a kid who kind of really thrives in an environment where they can break down complex problems and put together a simple plan, they might be great future social workers. I personally came into social work because of a love of public policy and how government works and how it works for its people. And so social work was a good fit for me as well.
Now, tell me, how does MTSU, you're working in conjunction on this program, especially in the master's area, with Austin Peay and Tennessee State Universities. How does that work? Three colleges that I thought were competitive, all in Middle Tennessee, working together.
Yeah, isn't that a great idea? Instead of competing against each other, to recruit students that we work together to equip a community of people to be good social workers. And we really see that as central to our mission. We also understand if you've got these three universities, if you just think about where they are alone and the types of students who are pulling into those three universities. So at Austin Peay, for example, we're talking about military families who, while maybe their husband isn't deployed, the wife is taking classes to become a social worker. In Nashville, we've got a historical black college who pulls in a very diverse amount of students in an urban city center. And then here at MTSU, we have this great students that come from all areas of Middle Tennessee. What we've been able to do is put them all together in some shared classroom environments with shared faculty and train them together for our profession. And because of our differences, we're stronger. We really do see that we can really make a measurable difference in the Middle Tennessee community without being competitive with each other and creating any kinds of barriers that competition might create.
Now, when you bring them together in the classroom environment, is this by way of, video, or is it actually person to person, shoulder to shoulder?
Yeah, it's both. And so it's kind of the best of both worlds. Students in our graduate school will take some of their classes on their home campus, the one that they're assigned to, in the building. So they come to MTSU and take about half of their courses in our building face-to-face. And then the other part of our courses, those are online. And so we create environments where they can come online and learn from one another across the three campuses.
So are you finding online courses, we know they're growing.
Yeah, they're growing.
are they effective, especially in this type of work?
Yeah, they can be incredibly effective in this kind of work. There are certain areas where we just still want to have that time where we are in the same space physically with students, that it's good to practice some of the skills of social work, some of the skills of therapy. some of the skills of community organizing with an instructor in the classroom. But there are other areas where online learning really gives each student an opportunity to do and participate in discussions, do the readings, where they can kind of go at their own pace to some degree. Online classes are highly engaging courses and high participatory courses, and I have found that it's a fantastic way to learn in a lot of different topics.
Do the students have an opportunity to get real life experience while they're in college?
Absolutely. I think this is probably one of the best things about social work is we have students at the end of their instruction in their senior year, they go out into the community and do a field internship, a practicum. And we have great community partners all over this city who welcome our students in and train them in how to do the work really well. So they have as many as 900 hours of clinical practice before they start into their first job. It gives them a great chance to try out the profession, gives them a great chance to learn the community, gives them a chance to be mentored and trained by a professional in the community doing the work on a day-to-day basis. And then they bring that back to the classroom because they're still taking classes during this time. And we have a chance then to talk through, you know, what are we really learning in our community? What are the kinds of things people need? What are people like? What's it like to really try to help children and families and the elderly as they move through their life phases?
Would a social worker or a student who is taking your classes, would they be exposed to both social work and psychology courses?
Yeah, psychology is an option for our students, and there's certainly some connections between the two disciplines. In social work, though, we use theories of development, and we look at theories, therapy, and how do we do interventions for counseling and crisis services, behavior modifications. There's a component of social workers that go out and become clinical practitioners, and they can do therapy and things like that. So we train for that. Then there's also a component of ours that kind of departs a little bit from psychology, where we look at public policy and community organizing and running complex community agencies. So we're preparing social workers to be leaders as well within organizations and communities.
What are the job prospects when you graduate, especially with a master's degree?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of our graduates with a master's degree will go on and work in hospitals and nursing homes, outpatient healthcare clinics. We watch them go in and work in places like public child welfare, usually moving into leadership roles at that point in time where they're helping to think about how do we do the work of government really well. Our students also end up doing private practice. They start their own practice within a community to do therapy. They work in schools as school social workers. They work in community centers for the aging, senior citizen centers. Really, job prospects are really good, and there's a lot of variety. It's one of the best things about social work, right? If you start into it and you think, well, I really wanted to work with kids. I love kids. And then you get into it and realize, well, and maybe I didn't really want to work with kids. We, within our discipline, it's perfectly normal and acceptable then to try and move into another part of social work because it is so diverse. It's a great way to have a career and spend your life.
So while they are a student at MTSU, can they sort of get their feet wet in all areas and learn before they get out into the job field that I like working with kids or I don't, or I like working with this group or that group?
Yeah, and a lot of times what we end up doing is we push them just a little bit, it's a loving push, into areas that they might be a little intimidated to go try and then find out it's really rewarding, such as mental health services or addiction and recovery services, working directly with the homeless community. That can be a little intimidating when you're first starting your career. And the problems seem big, and it seems like maybe that's not something you could be successful at. And what we have found is when we help students to navigate that through an internship, they're far more likely to go out and continue to do that work down the road, which I think makes Murfreesboro or Middle Tennessee a better community when we are training young people to address some of its most important needs.
We hear so much about the debt that goes along with a college education, and when you graduate, you have this albatross that you're pulling along with you. What about opportunities as you, say, are finishing up your undergraduate work before you get into the master's level and then on into the PhD?
Yeah.
Are there groups that will say, if they will come and work for us with that undergraduate degree, we'll pay them, we'll pay for their master's or their PhD? Are there?
Yes, there are, because social work is considered one of those critical needs within communities. And so there's not an exhaustive list, but there are opportunities, particularly, like you said, that transition from undergraduate to graduate school. A lot of government state employees are eligible for a bit of a waiver, a bit of a discount on their tuition, particularly if they're at places like the Department of Children's Services. So taking somebody who's been there doing really good casework and is ready to move into a graduate degree, the Department of Children's Services will help them as they make that transition. A lot of times, healthcare corporations will do that, and hospitals can provide some mechanism of relief that supports a student or a current employee kind of moving forward within the profession. It's definitely something to look into and to see. There's also quite a bit of just private business industry that offers some student student aid as they go on to college. Places you might not think of, and I don't know all of them, but I know certain industries like Amazon and some of the packaging and warehousing industries within Middle Tennessee. They want to see their employees go forward and get a good quality education and bring that back into the community that they're supporting.
So there are opportunities, and if you are listening to this and you have a child or a grandchild or know of somebody who is being described this morning, how can you learn more about the opportunities at MTSU?
Excellent. We'd love to talk to you. You can certainly come if you've got a high schooler that's coming around. We are always part of the True Blue Tour, so you should definitely check those out. Or when you register to take a tour of the university, if you let them know that you are interested in social work, they will connect you to us. You don't even have to look any further than that, and one of us will be happy to meet with you. Outside of that, of course, we have a website, and it's mtsu.edu and then /social work, and you can find us there. The other thing, though, is not only if you've got a young person or a grandchild that's interested in it, but a lot of times we as adults decide we want to do something different with our lives, and we have a good group of students who come through our program who this is their second career. They were accountants. Or they were doing something out in the community and then decide, I want to do something different. And so we have a good group of students of all ages.
Sounds like a winner. So for more information, get with mtsu.edu/social work.
Okay. Yes.
Dr. Angela Ferris, the assistant professor in the Department of Social Work and the coordinator of the Masters of Social Work program, visiting with us. Thanks for sharing this.
Thank you. Good morning.
All of you have a super rest of the day. Truman's next on WGNS.
The song is love. The song is love.